The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Welcome once again to It Came From The Radio. This is your host, Mar Torres, speaking. With me in the studio, I have our man missing in action, our senior correspondent, Charlie Saladino.
How's everybody doing?
And we have our very own ghost on the team, Hassan Godwin, on the phone.
I'm not on Pandora anymore. That's all that matters.
That's true. And for anybody who was actually watching the show last week live, and they saw the last 5 minutes, they actually got to see Hassan this year make a special appearance. Like, hey, I'm here, and then that was it. That was beautiful. That was beautiful.
It was a cameo. I was only paid for the momentary appearance.
That reminds me of a time when I was in high school, also many years ago, and after 15 minutes, they wouldn't let you into school. They had to wait for the next period, and I was trying to get into class, so I had to sneak into school, and the amount of time it took me to get into the class, I walked into the class, and a bell for the end of the class rang. I was like, well, I guess I missed that class.
Well, it's not as bad as the time I was going to a music class in college, and it was at Queensboro, and they have these hills that go right into the main area, the main courtyard.
Right.
And it rained the night before. Not only was I late, but I slipped down the hill, slide down the hill, get up, wind up by two beautiful girls, get up and say, how you doing? And then walk on to class where I was late, open the door, and I'm full of mud, and I'm late, and everybody's looking at me. And the teacher just looked at me, he said, just take a seat, Mr. Saladino. That's what we don't even want to know.
whatever that excuse was, we don't want to know.
Yeah, we just don't want to know about.
And thus, those stories explain why us reasonably intelligent men are hosting a radio show on Sunday morning.
There you go.
We were not academic giants. That's basically what.
But we could slide down the hill with perfection.
Exactly.
We could show up just after the time we needed to, right on time.
It was like the luge without the luge. That's what it was.
So if anybody's having any trouble listening to us on the air, you can go online to www.am1240wgbb.com. Listen to us on the live audio streaming. Also on the GBB website, you can see us in the web camera right now live. Unless you are time traveling with the rest of us, because we have daylight savings time. Well, it is daylight savings time, so we are time traveling. So people could be listening an hour from now trying to hear us, see? So they wouldn't see us. They'd see somebody else.
There you go. Like you got that all figured out, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
I get it. It's planned. It's all planned out.
Yes, I understand. I did brilliantly done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. So we're going to take it away with the news.
Take it away with the news, Mark.
As we've been mentioning for the year 2014, the news is brought to you in part by the Rat Bastards at Belmore Towing in Belmore, New York. Just in time for the holidays, as in Lent, if you want to give up good business practices, go to Belmore Towing in Belmore, New York, where they will charge you $60 for a $7 lug nut, happily so.
If you're lonely, it's a good way to get screwed, right?
Yes, that's right. You were getting screwed for the holidays. They will take care of you.
That was a magnificent delivery. I love that.
So let's see what we have.
Wow.
As previously mentioned, the guys at the New York Comic Con is going to have a second comic book focused con called the Special Edition NYC at the Javits Center in Manhattan on June 14th and 15th. Fortunately for you listeners out there, we here at It Came From Radio will be giving away tickets to the aforementioned con. I spoke to to the head of the con. They said they would be happy to accommodate us in any way possible. So as we get closer to the event, we will be giving away tickets to the convention in what we like to call the world's easiest contest.
Yes.
So stay tuned.
Ain't no easier contest in the world.
There probably isn't.
No. And you said you spoke to the head. Did the gentleman have no Lance, body?
Yeah, just the head. Just the floating head. The floating head of knowledge.
The head of the Comic-Con.
Not the body.
Don't pay attention to the person behind the curtain.
That's a shame. Charlie beat me to that joke by several minutes, as a matter of fact. All right, fair enough.
Sorry about that.
Speaking of heads.
Segue.
The heads of WB and the Wachowski siblings, which they're no longer brothers because one had a sex change operation. Are in the early stages of planning out a prequel trilogy to The Matrix. They plan to have the first film in theaters by 2017.
2017? I'm not even
going to
be alive.
Wow.
Who's interested in 2017?
From the desk of Hassan Godwin, he will not be around by 2017.
I won't be alive, but come on.
Hey.
2017.
It's all about the sizzle, not the steak anymore. You know,
stop making stupid movies. Make hovercrafts, hoverboards, and flying cars. It's almost 2015. We got less than a year to go.
I'm waiting for the bridge between New York and Japan myself.
The bridge? Wow. Where is that from?
I was thinking about it a long, long time ago when we started doing this show, and Jimmy Palmiotti, the anchor, creator, writer, had mentioned that the world was wasted on porn. And he said if we didn't do that, there would be a bridge between New York and Japan by now.
Wow, that's his analogy, that the reason there's no bridge from New York to Japan.
Yeah,
that was porn.
That was what he said.
That's astounding.
All that time wasted is because, you know, we would have had a bridge. So that's what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting for that bridge.
All right. Well, I'm waiting for the flying cars, man. 2015. This is when Marty and the Doc Brown are about to show up. And they're going to be in the flying DeLorean, and everybody else is still going to be on the ground.
That's true.
It's not right.
My question is there going to be any restroom stops on that bridge?
Just like a 3-hour bridge.
Just
drive,
a thought,
right?
Yeah,
I think it'll be longer than 3 hours.
You have like a Bob's Big Boy, you know?
There's got to be a couple of. There should be a bridge city. Like a city where people live on the bridge.
And they'll call it Atlantis. Yeah. They'll call it Atlantis.
Yeah.
Yes,
the Bridgeites.
There is no land, only water.
Yeah.
Let's never mind that.
I think it's the Pacific, by the way, but anyway. It wouldn't be Atlantis if it was over the Pacific. But.
Well, they got it wrong. But they can't get it wrong. That's like in Mars Attacks. You know, they were just lying. There was no mistranslation. They were just lying.
Yak.
We are your friends. Don't shoot us. Well, they were just lying. That was the greatest concept ever. That they were just lying.
This is one of my favorite movies. I own it.
It was nothing beyond. We're lying, and that's the thing. We're great.
I like the fact that all the stars die, and Tom Jones saves them.
If only they had bothered to write a script. That was my only problem with the film. It's like, wow, this is completely unscripted.
It was still enjoyable, though.
There was a level of enjoyment that came out of it, yes. Okay. I don't know if I enjoyed the film, but I definitely enjoyed watching the film. There's a big difference.
All right. Speaking of films,
how did you do it?
The official word is out. Fast and Furious Part 7 will continue filming, and it will be released on April 10th, 2015. They will resume shooting this month. For a while, the studio didn't know how to proceed with the film due to Paul Walker's death. They were debating whether to trash the entire movie and make a new one, do a reboot, continue on. They had no idea what they were going to do. But now they've decided that Paul Walker will still be in the film, they will resume filming, and that he will retire, and his character will retire in the movie.
He will retire?
Yes, the character will retire, so they're going to
Well, how are they going to do that? They're getting a letter from him, or what? He's going to be in the film, and all of a sudden, they're getting a letter from him?
They filmed 85% of all his scenes, and there was talk about doing a stand-in and computer-generated, you know, guy in the background.
Oh, okay.
So they'll try to mix and match.
That's scary, because they could do that now.
Yeah.
I don't even think about that stuff.
I bet you that's BS. I bet you they're going to kill him off.
Really? You think so?
I think they're going to kill him off, but they're saying that he's going to retire so that they can keep the, you know, the shock value.
Uh-huh.
So they're going to retire. That means they're going to have to retire Jordana Brewster. Because, like, why would he retire and the mother of his child doesn't retire, you know?
Right.
And in order to keep all that going and keep all those characters in play, they're going to have to explain why he's not around where, you know, while these other characters are still going strong. So they're going to have to kill him off. They're going to have to really invest in that. In the tragedy of his real life passing, so that they could propel the story further.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you're done. No, I did.
I'm never done. You can talk right now. I'm never done.
Yeah, I'm sorry. No, I normally don't do that. But anyway, like a really good thing they could do, and watch them do it because they're listening now.
Right.
A really good thing they could do is have him retire and then do the whole MASH thing. Remember when the colonel left?
He went home? Yes.
He went home, and then they're all in the operating room, and they get a letter that his helicopter crashed.
Down, yeah. I was going to go for something different. I was going to go for the Dynasty one, where the guy was in the oil rig accident, and they got a new actor to play him because he was wrapped up in the face.
Oh.
So they can do that.
Or it's all a dream, and they wake up.
Yeah. It's all Vin Diesel who's been dreaming about it the whole time.
Yeah.
It's Vin Diesel's dream.
Yeah, and we haven't gotten past Fast and Furious 1.
Right,
really.
And he gets up, and the last line of diction is, "Wow."
And credit.
Yeah, right.
When the studio producer's like, "We're gonna make millions off of it."
Millions.
They're writing these ideas right now. This is great. This is genius. We can do that.
The guys from It Came From the Radio. They're unbelievable. They're an unstoppable creative team.
Well, should we credit them? No, nobody listens.
No, no. They shouldn't get payrolled ever.
No,
ever.
No, no.
I'm speaking of creative teams.
That's so good.
Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, creators of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, along with IW Publishing, will release a 30th anniversary special featuring a cover illustrated by Eastman and Laird. The cover is notable for not only showcasing the creators of the popular media franchise, but is billed as the first work produced together by Eastman and Laird in over 20 years, because they've worked separately for the past 20 years.
Wow, yeah. And you know what I discovered about that?
What?
Seriously? That I can say Teenage Ninja Mutant Turtles really fast.
Well, you can't even say it right. You said it's wrong slow.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's why I'm telling you. I can't do it fast, and that's the problem with the whole film.
Can I just honestly say that I've never come across a franchise like this where everybody collectively decided it was genius, which is the way I remember it when the Turtles first came on the scene, where it was just the Eastman and Laird comic books, and everybody was really interested. I understand the connection with Daredevil, how they kind of co-opted the origin of Daredevil to the origin of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But everybody, you know, when you like, okay, what is it? It's like, it's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Like, wait. Say that again? It's the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I remember once I got on board with it, and I went around and started showing people the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, there was a collective, "I don't get that. That's the dumbest name I've ever heard, but the whole thing is so fascinating, I have to look at it. I have to, you know, I have to follow it." And it just exploded from there. And it was just, it's a kind of genius, unfortunately, and I'm on a soapbox, and the soapbox is breaking because I've, in my time at home, I've gained weight. But the level of creativity, there is no such thing as that kind of level of creativity anymore. No one...
Yes.
When's the last Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles thing that just came out of nowhere?
Once you get past the title, it's a great concept. But the title
is great. Once you just accept the whole thing.
Yeah.
Even the name of it is outlandish and forces you to kind of deal with the reality of what they were doing.
Because when you think of quick ninjas, the first animal you think of is a turtle.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. That's what I'm talking about. There was irony. The whole thing was dripping with irony. And it just exploded. Remember, there was a musical? It was a Broadway musical?
It was a show coming out of the show tour, yeah.
Yeah, like the Ice Capades or whatever. Yeah. Batman, mm-hmm. Batman Ice Capades or some kind of weird crap like that.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. I mean, the turtles were everywhere. Everywhere at one point. They were gigantic. And then, what's his name, brought him back with a CG movie, which wasn't bad at all. I actually enjoyed that. And now Michael Bay is about to destroy them, you know, with one fell swoop after 20 years of that, more than almost 30 years of them being around.
30th anniversary, yeah.
Yeah, he'll find a way to bring in a sexy Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
Yeah,
they tried that with the Ninja Turtles, The Next Mutation, brought by Saban when they had it, and they were live action. They had a fifth turtle, which was female.
Yeah.
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 Well, all I think is the Italian turtle, who is he?
Guido?
Donatelli? What's his name?
They're all Italian.
Guido. They're all Italian, the turtles?
Michelangelo,
Raphael,
Donatello.
Donatello, Leonardo.
April O'Neil.
Huh?
And April O'Neil.
Well, didn't the rat name him after Otis?
Yeah, Michelangelo was the last one.
Okay. Well, then the show should be the color of the Italian flag. That's all I'm saying.
That's
okay?
What trying to get
and
to.
That's only my personal opinion, okay? I could see somebody in Brooklyn now. Yeah, that's a good idea.
We'll write that down.
First of all, the comic was black and white with only colored covers, and the only way you could tell them apart was their weapons.
Right.
Because they added the colored the headbands in
that
the
was,
movies.
No,
the
that was cartoon. That was for the cartoon because
for the cartoon and then the movies.
In the when they actually made color stuff, they all had red bandanas.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Well, they're actually
that's what I'm saying, which was kind of cool. Makes it, you know. It does, I mean, why would you have a blue bandana or a purple one? You know, when you or
kids
orange.
Like color,
huh?
Kids like color.
Yes, I know. I'm saying the practicality of it was kind of ridiculous. But I had all the action figures. I bought every one of those Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I was a fan without even realizing I was a fan. When G.I. Joe was around and Transformers, I remember avidly chasing after those and loving it and trying to buy as many of those as possible. And I was definitely mentally dedicated to G.I. Joe. And the Ninja Turtles came around, and I suddenly just had all the Ninja Turtles toys. Don't remember being avid about it. Don't remember, you know, chasing after it. I just kind of had them. And I just kind of had to come to grips with the fact that, oh, I guess I'm a fan. I guess I really love the Teenage Mutant.
You belungingly came, I must like this.
from the senior correspondent,
yeah.
I happen to have, and I wish I saved it, the first G.I. Joe that came out, the first series, because I was a little fledgling when they all came out, and I had to get one. And there was four different ones for the four different services. And I got the Air Force one.
And so had you had, but if you had held on to it, it wouldn't still be in the original packaging, so.
No, hell no.
So you would have gotten two, one to keep in the box and one to.
And it did have a kung fu grip, but they just didn't advertise it. It had one with the finger that you could put on the trigger.
Right.
And the other one was like a kung fu grip thing.
But what did it grip?
At the bottom of the rifle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I got it.
Which makes the whole idea of it being kung fu ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Kung fu grip to hold onto your gun.
Kung fu grip with a machine gun.
And hit the person with your gun. That's the kung fu. The power of the kung fu grip.
That was gung fu.
Yeah. Wait a minute. If I could hit the desk and it didn't make a noise, I would go, boom, boom, shh.
All right. So,
kung fu grip. I like that.
Kevin Eastman says, going back to the news, Peter and I have had a relationship you could relate to a couple that has been married for 30 years. If you follow, we have more than our share of ups and downs, trials and tribulations, differences of opinions on how to, quote-unquote, raise our kids, as well as our time apart to stretch our wings creatively. Without each other, there would have never been any Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I would bluntly say, Peter Laird is the coolest creator I have ever had the good fortune to work with, to know, and to call my friend.
Aw.
Huh. All right.
Should have read that like Clint Eastwood. Well, boy.
Oh, that was it? You know, I thought that you were going to do it. I'm waiting for the whole thing.
I thought you were going to carry on with that. I'm sorry.
I can't do it. I can only do an Elmo. That's the only person I can do. All right. I can do Elmo. Do you feel lucky? Elmo likes Ninja Turtles. That's all I can do. That's it. The 48-page special in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 30th Anniversary is scheduled for release in May with a cover price of only
$7.99. Why do they do that? Why do they annoy me? Why don't they just make it $8? Why do they $7.99, $6.99? Make it round it off!
How do you really feel about that?
Nobody trusts a rounded off number then.
Oh my god. And this way they could say if the thing is $199, that you could get it for under $200.
That's right.
A penny under.
It's a penny.
Oh.
So we're ready for our break there, Ryan? We'll be right back with the Kingfin Radio.
I have to take medication.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music.
Then the heroes four. In this day and age, who could ask for more? The crime wave is high, with muggings mysterious. All police and detectives are furious, cause they can't find the source of this lethally evil force. This is serious, so give me a quarter. I was a witness, give me a report. Call April O'Neil in on this case, and you better hurry up, there's no time to waste. We need help like Quick on the double. Have pity on the city, man, it's in trouble. We need heroes like the Lone Ranger. When Tonto came pronto, when there was danger, they didn't say we'd be there in half an hour, cause they displayed was hot on the trail, determined to put these crooks in jail. She spied the bad guys and saw what happened, but before she knew it, she fell in a trap and got caught. Yeah, she was all alone, with no friends and no phone. Now this was beyond her worst dreams, cause she was cornered by some wayward teens. Headed by strength, they were anything but good. Misguided on love, they called them the foot. They could terrorize and be angry youth, and they'd mug the people who needed proof. Then from out of the dark came an awesome sight, shouting cowabunga as they hit the ground. From the field of weeds, the heroes rescued the flower, cause they possessed powers. Do you stand for what you believe in? Find the strength to do what's right? That's true. Heroes on a half shell, they're on a mission. When
is about. Got the enemy wishing that they stayed at home instead of fighting these ninja masters with moves like weapons. They were once normal, but now the mutants. Splint is the teacher, so they are the students. Leonardo, Michelangelo, and Donatello make up the team with one other fellow, Raphael. He's the leader of the group, transformed from the norm by the nuclear goop. Pizza's the food that's sure to please. These ninjas are into pepperoni and cheese. Back to the story, it's not hard to find. Ninjas not just of the body, but of the mind. Those were the words that the master instructed. But a letter from Shredder had Splinter abducted. That was the last straw, spring into action. Step on the foot, now the gauntlet was traction. Now this is for real, so you fight for justice. Your shell is hard, so you shout, they can't dust just more. Like some old coffee table, since you've been born, you've been willing and able to defeat the snake, protect the weak, fight for rights and your freedom to speak. Now the villain is chilling, so you make a stand. Back to the wall, put your sword in your hand. Remember the words of your teacher, your master. Evil moves fast, but good moves faster than light. Shining for your illumination. Good versus evil equals confrontation. So when you're in trouble, don't give in and go sour. Try to rely on your powers.
Wow, that was hot. Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came From The Radio. This is your host, Mario Toro, speaking along with our very own senior correspondent, Charlie Saladino, and the man on the moon, Hassan Godwin, on the phone.
And I just like
the Vanilla Ice ninja rap better.
I like to say, Hassan, you missed the best. We had Mark over here doing the whole song. Doing the whole song, word for word, beat for
song.
Beat.
I love that song.
That's from our heyday, unfortunately.
That would be the second cassette I ever bought in my entire life was
wow.
A Turtle song.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
from what I remember, it was a good album.
And that was Partners in Crime, CRYME, because, you know, they were.
Man. See, if I said that, I would say, that would have been the second A-track I ever bought.
Yeah. Alrighty, so this week, we're in for a special tribute. Our very own Charlie Saladino, senior correspondent, went to the 50th anniversary of the Beatles coming a couple weeks back.
Yep.
And we were in the parking lot one day, and he was telling me about all the great things that he did, and I'm like, well, why don't you say it on the radio, because this is a really interesting report to give. So our very own senior correspondent, Charlie Saladino, is going to tell us everything about the 50th anniversary of the Beatles and what happened there.
Well, I really don't remember a lot. What I do remember about it
very much.
Is there was a lot of pretty colors.
Yeah. How do you like it? I should have gone.
Yes.
It was terrible.
And a lot of butterflies that weren't there. And anyway, as everybody here knows, I'm a big Beatle fan. An enormous Beatle fan. And this was the 50th anniversary. And the best part about this convention is that it was held in New York, where the others are held in Jersey, where we all know you can't make a left. And so it was at the Hyatt, the Grand Hyatt, right in Grand Central Station, which was a magnificent complex. And a lot of great exhibits, but the thing that amazed me about this convention, because it is a convention, it's a festival, is that the way it was organized, and I was telling Mark about the way it was organized, and I thought it was brilliant. They had huge floors where they had huge rooms. They had them set up for all the exhibits. Each exhibit was in a separate room. So there was no big traffic in the hallways or in the corridors or in the Great Hall. There was no big traffic. They also had an enormous concert hall in the hotel, and that was I couldn't believe when I walked into it. This was in the hotel complex, because it was like it was enormous. It was enormous. So they had concerts going on constantly of, you know, like all the people of the day, Donovan, Peter Asher. They had a Beatles tribute band, which was great. They were called Liverpool. They were fabulous. And then they would have people to get up and talk. And then you would have the little rooms where people would, people who were involved with the Beatles and, you know, they would sit there and they would give lectures. And it was a personal, these rooms were so small, it was like a personal thing. So it would be like, wow, the insight you would get to talk to these people who were like,
they were there.
Dealt with them every day and was there through every part of, you know, things that I recall hearing about. They were there. You know, they were sitting right next to him. They were there. Cousin Brucey was there.
Cousin Brucey. His hair.
yeah. And I had the great pleasure of meeting Patty Boyd, who, if you guys out there don't know, she was married to George Harrison and Eric Clapton, not at the same time, but...
yeah, Layla.
Yeah.
That would have been a neat
trick. Exactly. And three of the greatest songs were written for her, and that was when she was married to George Harrison. It was something. And then while Eric Clapton was in lust for her while she was married to George Harrison, Layla. And then when Clapton was married to Wonderful Tonight. And there's also little other songs thrown in there by Clapton, like Bell Bottom. Yeah, twice. Rented Lips. Sorry, folks. Bell Bottom Blues and other stuff like that. I just had the pleasure of meeting her, and she was so, and she's 70, and she still looks amazing, and I wanted to write a song about it. She was so nice, she was so, and just as I get there, I'm on this line that is like almost going to 2 hours long.
Wow.
Right? To meet her. And I get right in front of her, and the annoying people with the microphones on come to take her away for a lecture. And I'm looking, I'm going, you got to be kidding me. And she looks at me and she says, you know, like, oh, I'm so sorry, but I will be right back. I promise, just stay here. I'll be right back. So she goes away. And then the one with the microphone, while she left, turns around. She won't be coming back soon. She got an interview with Cousin Brucey, and she just won't be coming back. It's going to take a long time. So if you want to stay, stay. But it's going to be a long time.
Yeah,
and I felt like throwing her a beating right on the spot.
Oh,
but
no.
I said, you know what? Let me stay, because she was so charming and so sincere.
Right.
That you just believed her. And it was like, no, she said she was coming back. I'm going to stay. So we stayed in the room. And then who comes walking in but Donovan, who was a big 70s star. He was sort of like that psychedelic kind of music.
Right.
You know, with Mellow Yellow and Sunshine Superman and everything like that. He comes in and he's very nice, and he's, you know, and all these people, like in my mind, I'm still seeing them young, and then they walk in, and it's like, wow, you know, the air doesn't do well with skin, you know? So anyway, so he was nice, and I got to stay there in the room while he was there, which was a big thrill, because I used to listen to those songs all the time. I had people in the lecture room where she was going to lecture, which I wanted to see.
Right.
But I wasn't, you know, moving, at that point, getting off the line. So they kept texting me, it's almost over. So I keep hearing this annoying little lady with the microphone there going, well, after that, it's the interview with Cousin Brucey. That'll be an hour, you know? That'll be an hour. You know, I can't keep remembering that. So they text me and it's over.
Right.
And now I'm saying, well, let's see if she keeps her word. And like clockwork, she walked in and I found out that they wanted her to do the interview, but because she promised me and the four other people that she'd be right back, she came back for that.
Wow.
Which I thought was great. And I got a chance to speak with her, and I got a chance to, which I did read her book called Wonderful Tonight, and I read, right before that book, I read Eric Clapton's book, was his
biography. Did you sign both of those, Charlie?
Yes, she
no, signed. Did you sign them?
Did you sign
them? Yes, yes. After she signed it, I signed one for her. You know,
she signed her own book for her. Yeah,
I signed Wonderful Tonight. Thanks for coming back, Patty. Charlie Saladino came from the radio. Here you go. Here you go. Take that with you. That's for nothing.
Right. Hey, that's for coming back. That's for coming
just
back.
Just put it in the pocketbook. Yeah, that's what I did. And that's for coming back. Thanks for coming back. But the thing I really liked about Patty, which is why she was pretty pleasantly charming, but that she had a martini on the table
really?
Next to her with four olives on the
wow.
toothpick.
Nice.
I'm saying, what a woman. She's a four olive woman. You can't, you know. So, anyway, and the other thing that I did was there was a case of water like behind the thing, and I waited for 2 hours on that line. I just walked behind the counter, I ripped open the thing, took a bottle of water and drank it, was waiting for anybody with microphones on, you know, and the ear thing to say something. But yeah, she came back and she was amazing. And you know, just for me to talk to somebody that I've read about, I read books about, I read, you know, and if you remember, Patty Boyd was one of the schoolgirls in A Hard Day's Night. That's how Harrison met her. A Hard Day's Night, she was one of the schoolgirls, you know, on the train.
Right.
And they fell in love and got married. So it's a lot of history there. So I had to meet her. But then going back to the convention.
Right. What kind of exhibits did they have?
They had amazing artwork. People making, like, people's own concepts in their mind of what it might have been like. You know, and just surreal art. The bad part, the bad part about the convention was the prices of some of these pictures. Normal, everyday pictures that you could get maybe,
right.
you know, for like $10 somewhere. They were charging insane prices, a picture of McCartney and Ringo. Not even by, you know,
it's
signed
like,
by the...
like us.
Yeah,
so
and it was in a frame.
Prices, right?
Yeah, it was in a frame, and it was like $200-something.
Was it a gold-plated frame?
What?
Was it a gold-plated frame?
Yeah, right. It was a frame that said, if you buy this sucker, right on the end. But... then they had
it. So that's the Stallone place. Wasn't he the one that at the New York Comic Con?
Yeah.
It was
$800, I think it was.
Yeah, mortgaging people's houses in order to get an autograph.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you wanted an artwork of boxing gloves from him, it was extra.
$20. Right? It was $20.
Yeah. But so anyways, they had this great artwork. And the one that impressed me was when Paul McCartney met John Lennon. If you know the story, John Lennon was playing at this little village, as it was like a little village bazaar or something like that. They call it a fete. And he was playing with his group, the Quarrymen. I think it was like one of their first gigs, and they were on a flatbed trailer. And a friend of John's, who was also a friend of Paul's, Ivan Vaughn, who's no longer with us. Ivan's departed this world. But that one gentleman, in my mind for years, because I knew the history, if it wasn't for Ivan Vaughn, there would not be the Beatles. And people don't even know that. But Ivan Vaughn knew John Lennon, and he also knew Paul McCartney. And he knew what a great musician. Paul McCartney was 16.
Right.
He knew what a great musician he was. And he told Paul that he wanted him to meet John, and they're playing at the Village Fete, come down and meet him. So Paul, with his guitar strapped on his back, took his bicycle and met John. There is a piece of artwork. When they took a break, they went into the gymnasium, the auditorium.
Right, whatever.
And they were just gathering. And Ivan comes up with Paul McCartney, and, you know, Paul, this is John. John, this is Paul. And there was a piece of artwork of that very scene, which was, I guess from all the pictures I've seen, very close to, they really don't have any photographs of
right,
that.
Right,
because
they didn't know. Who would take a picture of that?
But they had a movie called Nowhere Boy, and it was out a couple of years ago, and they have that scene where, you know, they took the auditorium right. of the St. Peter's Village Faith, and they just did it in there, and somebody took the whole, you know, the whole interior,
right?
And they just had the meeting, you know, right. forward is, and it, for me, it was phenomenal because I don't like any fabrications of, you know, I'm a true historian, of, right? As far, and it was phenomenal, and I was going to buy it, but there was the big concert starting. So I said, I'll come back after the concert. And that was, and I'm saying in my mind, buy it now.
Somebody you know? Bought it.
I went to the concert. The concert went to 1:30 in the morning. When I came out, all the vendors were gone. You know. But the thing that impressed me, and also because I was 8 years old, going on 9 when they came, and I bought a couple of things, Beatle things. My mom bought me a couple of Beatle things. I had a little guitar, pink guitar. The thing was, they had all those toys at the Beatle Fest in one room. There was all the suits, the boots,
right.
and the nostalgia stuff. And people had the original thing and the prices on them. And I'm thinking, I used to play with these things, but 5,000, 9,000. There was... A toy set of, I remember them, bongos that had Ringo on it. And the thing was selling for $9,000. And, yeah. And then there was, like, all other little things. And I was only able to afford parking for Beatle fans only on a thing I bought. But it was phenomenal. Just the structure of the Beatle Fest.
Right.
They had different rooms. They have smaller concert room where there was puppet shows for the kids, where they had Beatle puppets for the kids. And there was exhibitions like of guitars that Harrison used.
Right.
The Gibson Company set up guitars. The Rickenbacker Company, the Hofner was there, you know, a replica because Paul still uses his Hofner. And then Modern Drummer, which, you know, I'm drummer. Right. Modern Drummer had a whole room to itself, which was big enough to have a display of pictures and seating.
Right.
And they had a replica of Ringo's drums on there and another set of drums. And in there at different times, they had different drummers. The Carmen Appice from Vanilla Fudge, my time,
right?
A big drummer. He's also was in a group called Beck Bogart and Appice, and with Jeff Beck, who is phenomenal. And there was Danny Sarafin, who's a drummer from Chicago, and Liberty DeVito, Billy Joel's drummer, and then Mark Hudson, who to me, you know, I'm not really a big Mark Hudson fan. He was one of the Hudson brothers on TV.
Okay.
He's Kate Hudson's uncle, you know. And he comes down every year. His claim to fame, he's Ringo's producer for his album, so he knows Ringo well. And he comes down every year, and his goatee, he makes it rainbow color. And he was, you know, he wears...
It's his thing.
It's his thing.
He runs.
He wears phenomenal.
Yes, you can.
Yeah, yeah. It's all right. It's we saw it 5,000 years in a row. You know, just keep it gray, okay? So anyway, so he comes in, and I'm walking with Marianne, who co-hosted the show.
Yeah.
And I'm walking down, and I pass him. I go, "Hey, Mark, how you doing?" He goes, "Fine. How are you?" And she goes, "Do you know him?" I said, "No, I never met him before." You know, it's just now I make him think, "Do I know him?" You know, that's what you do. You know,
now you got to get over it. Now you got to get in the tour bus.
Yeah, now
you got to find a way into the tour bus.
Yeah. So anyway, I was there, and I got to talk to those three drummers, which were phenomenal, especially Liberty DeVito. We had a long, lengthy talk, and people say he's an a-hole. But he wasn't then. We had a long, lengthy talk, and like nobody was bothering. I don't think nobody recognizes drummers, you know.
Right.
So nobody was bothering them, and we just sat there. And thanks to Miriam, because she got me out of one of the concert. Peter Asher was there,
right?
In concert, and we were waiting for the big song, you know, A World Without Love,
okay,
which McCartney wrote for him. So everybody was waiting, but he's doing all this. He's talking about his movie career, you know, everything. So Marianne says to me, hey, that thing with the drummers are starting if you want to go down. So I really didn't want to miss the song, but then I was saying, this is really boring. So I went down to the drum, and I got to meet all of them. We took pictures with them. I have pictures with them, and everything like that. And then I went back up for the end of the Peter, and I just get in, and he does the song.
See,
it was just perfect. The autograph signing, nobody charged money.
Really?
Nobody charged money. And wow. These
are legends.
These are people. Who these other people, like, can't even shine their shoes, you know?
Wow.
And these were legends who were up there. And nothing. And Patty Boyd. Patty Boyd charged nothing for her autograph.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And people brought books. She said she'll sign anything, you know, like me. And so that was, being from Comic-Con, that was
right,
phenomenal.
Right, so the difference.
That, so, and I kept saying, and you could tell I was, what is going to... Nothing. They're charging for nothing. They don't charge anything. You know, whatever you want to sign, you provide what you want to
sign.
But they're not charging anything.
What about taking pictures of them? They were charging...
All the pictures you want.
That's amazing.
And the thing with Patty Boyd, and the reason why the line took so long, was because everybody was going around the table, and she stood up with everybody and took the picture. And then they left. When I got there, this big... Jim Gunda guy, he comes in, he goes, no more behind the table. I said, there's just four of us. How long could it take? No more. And she was like looking at him, why can't? No, we can't do it. So, you know, I had to do the over the table thing and stuff like that. But that's what they were doing. And Donovan did the same thing, you know, with, it just staggers the mind coming from Comic-Con.
Right.
And their song, Dear Prudence. Prudence Farrow was there, the, Mia Farrow's sister.
Right.
And when they were in their transcendental state and all the Maharishi things, she was over there with them, with her sister, Prudence. And she never came out of her room.
Right.
So they wrote Dear Prudence, which is really a song about, you know, come out to play. You know?
Right.
So she was there talking. She kept going with the transcendental meditation. And she was nice. She did not age well, though, but she was nice. And anyway, what impressed me was the organization of the whole thing.
Well, not just that. I mean, for you know, we do go to comic conventions a lot. And
yes.
There are more now than there have ever been. Yeah. And the fact that they didn't charge for anything, and they were so interactive with you, with the fans, that blows my mind more than anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've had, I mean, Hassan used to do security. I mean, you know the ins and outs of conventions.
Well, it seems like they're more, like the venue in it itself is more interested in being a venue and more interested in being there for the purpose of the celebration. As opposed to making a buck off of the fans, which is, unfortunately, I guess we got to say what comic book conventions have become like. It's like, I don't know if you remember the Woodstock 1997, I think it was.
I tried
the
to bring
one,
back,
the one that caught fire.
Yeah.
Because they were charging the people who went there, they were charging those $7, $7 or $8 for a bottle of water.
Yep.
You know? And that's kind of the direction that the comic book conventions are heading in, where it's like no price is too high for a trivial item. And then you're talking about, like, you know, people showing up to this particular convention, and so a lot of the merchandise is free, and the signatures are free, and people are, you know, like the headliners or the people who are the star attractions are actually happy to be seen and to interact with the people. That's, you know, of course, that's a complete rarity. That's really unheard of in modern big time convention universe today. So that's while you were talking, that's what was most outstanding or astounding to me.
And you know, the amazing thing about the Beatlefest was, you figured there's a lot of senior correspondents there. There was an amazing amount of kids who just appreciate the music and
yeah.
and I'm talking the array of ages
right.
were from 30, 20s and down to little kids would be like their parents listen, they get into it. I was talking to a couple of people. I said, does she really? Oh, all the time. She grew up with the music. She loves it, you know? And in the lounge areas, and this was the best part to me, in the lounge areas, there was just people who bought instruments and were just wow. singing Beatles songs. Not even bad. they were the kind of people that if you said the wrong syllable in the song, you know, like Katy Perry, they would have strung her up, you know, which, you know, I don't really think it was that bad, but they're getting crazy. But she could have said she. I mean, she kissed a girl and all that, so it doesn't really matter. But
I'm saying so. Yeah. First of all, the Beatles music is, you know, is absolutely ageless.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So, I mean, that goes without saying. But second of all, even if the Beatles music wasn't ageless, which it is, and, you know, iconic and ageless, music today is astonishingly bad, you know? It's just, I mean, and I think it's, whereas you can't claim it's universal, that's right. across the board. I think a lot of people, I mean, that's kind of like a mainstream knowledge that the music we have today is, as crud. So of course, the only thing that people can listen to, you know, if you have a choice between listening to Justin Bieber or listening to something, you know, something iconic that is timeless and that your parents and you know, and to the extent, you know, your parents and older brothers and sisters enjoyed, what's the choice going to be? Pretty
exactly.
simple.
Bieber.
And it's
that's a choice that you would make, Mark. You love the Green Ranger.
I'm a believer.
Enough, Mark.
I really don't listen to him.
Well, I must say that me and my colleagues, you know, people who are my age, we talk about how we live through a musical revolution.
Yeah,
we will never see it again.
Nope, you won't.
You know, hopefully we do.
No,
not gonna happen.
It's over.
Yeah, we will never see it again.
So
never.
Let me ask you this one last question.
Okay.
Usually in conventions, especially ones in New York, the people going to the conventions aren't kind of like not really happy sometimes. And you seem to have like a really genuine time just talking to other people, because you know, you go to conventions, we really don't talk to other con goers.
Yeah.
We talk to the, you know, the vendors and dealers and stuff and people we know. So how was that, the interaction,
that
feel?
It was an excellent question, because everybody was amazing. It was everybody was just happy to be there, happy to be around when the Beatles came in. They were just happy. Even the kids were like singing the songs and stuff, and it was just to me, it was great, because that's what the Beatles were all about. That's what that time was all about. Peace, love. Nobody fought. Nobody, you know. And we did this at the convention without drugs. Back then, I don't know. But, yeah, just kidding. But nobody, it was the same. It carried over.
Right.
It just carried over to the conventions. The one in New York, and especially New York. Of course, there was people, but again, I kudos to the hotel for the way they did it, because nobody was shoving anybody, nobody was bumping into anybody. Like the Saturday, we went to the Comic-Con and you couldn't get a germ through the crowd.
Yeah.
But it was very low, and you look in the rooms were large, so the crowds weren't, and everybody's looking. And if you looked, the person next to you moved away so you could see, you know, and just everybody was so nice at the conventions, and it was a good tribute to the times, the Beatles and the times, because that's what it was all about living back then.
So we have about 2 minutes, less than 2 minutes to go.
And
so
on one hand,
Hassan,
that was good. And how apropos, but for the times,
See? So, Hassan, you have a final thought?
I hope that's not my final thought.
I have a final
thought.
That's a
great final thought.
My final thought is that this sounds like a great thing, and I hate to admit, I'm not a big Beatles fan. I do appreciate some of the music, but it does sound like you had a great time, and maybe these other conventions might follow suit.
I hope so, because it would be great for us to go to a Comic-Con and actually walk walk to the exhibit hall or to an exhibit hall and not have to, you know, fight through the crowd.
So that about does it for this week on It Came From Radio. Join us right here and every week on WGBB. If you missed any part of this show, you can go on to our website, www.itcamefromradio.com. You can hear our archives, which will be up in a week or so. And we'll see you next week.
Take it easy.
You have been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.